Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. A new retrospective at Gilcrease Museum seeks to update the renown of one of America's earliest Western painters, John Mick Stanley. Stanley, like his contemporaries George Catlin and Carl Bodmer, were among the first to give Americans a view of the peoples and cultures of our indigenous populations across North America. Stanley also painted scenes of the westward expansion that was displacing those peoples as well. And like those other artists, Stanley traveled throughout the West to the Indians of the Southwest, the Northwest, even Hawaii to the indigenous people there, along with the Great Plains tribes. So why is Stanley lesser known? Well, a fire in 1865 at the Smithsonian Institution destroyed over 200 of his works which were housed there. Painted Journeys, the art of John Mick Stanley, seeks to change his reputation. It's one of the first retrospectives of this artist and will feature over 60 key works from his output, featuring portraits and painted scenes from his encounters with American Indians and expeditionary figures on his numerous journeys west. My guest today is Mindy Besaw, curator at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Prior to that, she was at the Whitney Center of Art at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West in Cody, Wyoming, which is the presenter of this exhibition. Painted Journeys, the Art of John Mick Stanley, is currently on display at Gilcrease and will continue through January 3rd. Mindy Besaw is my guest today. Mindy Besaw, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
We're looking forward to this retrospective of the work of John Mick Stanley. You know, when you think of some of the early 19th century American artists that were going west, the first artists that were going west, obviously you think of George Catlin, you think of Bodmer, but maybe John Mick Stanley not so much, but probably of the three, Stanley ranks up there for his travels and his depictions all across the West, and we're talking all across the West.
Exactly. And it is interesting. Stanley isn't often mentioned, and there are a couple of reasons for that. His work really did rival George Catlin's as far as an Indian gallery goes. So Stanley was amassing, similarly to Catlin, portraits of Native Americans, representative of different tribes, actually traveling to their homes all throughout the United States to meet them and then paint their portraits. Catlin, by the time John Mick Stanley started to go west in the 1840s, Catlin had already been taking his Indian gallery on the road, and he had actually been in Europe. Stanley was certainly aware of Catlin and didn't want to duplicate the exact thing. But the reason we don't hear as much about Stanley these days is Stanley had his Indian gallery of over 150 paintings on loan at the Smithsonian. And in 1865, a tragic fire burned most of what was on view there, and that castle building just gutted the inside. So Stanley lost all but seven paintings that were on view. Now,
wow.
Catlin's Indian gallery was not at the Smithsonian at the time, so his is still intact. In fact, it is now part of the Smithsonian's collection. So some of that is just that we don't know Stanley because there's less work out there.
But Stanley also took a much broader view of the West than Catlin, too, because he's doing these very romantic paintings of settlers moving west, of Native Americans' plight. There's one on the show that sort of said the last of the, what's the
last
name?
Last of their race.
The last of their race, and they're literally on the on the
on
edge
the brink
of the Pacific.
Pacific.
Yeah,
yes.
It's like there's nowhere else to go.
Yes. Stanley is an interesting person for a couple reasons. One is, as you mentioned, he was more traveled than someone like Catlin. Stanley even made it all the way to Hawaii 10 years before Hawaii was annexed and painted the King and Queen of Hawaii. So he covered a lot of ground and subject matter. Catlin really celebrated himself and promoted himself as a documentary artist, so he was painting it as it was. Stanley was a bit more responsive to artistic trends of the time, to things of allegory, to romance and reflection. So The Last of Their Race is an allegory. It's many different characteristics of different tribes. You have a Mohawk headdress, Blackfeet leggings, all different kinds of tribes mixed together as if it's one unit, one type of person that has been just pushed all the way to the West.
In many ways, it predates how we consider art in the 20th century. It was a political statement.
Absolutely. And in many ways, Stanley was a man of his time. He was influenced by this idea that the native peoples were really doomed to perish in the wake of Western expansion. But if you think of his time period, this is 1840s, 1850s. 1850s in Washington, D.C. was a very intense moment for Indian policy, and he was in D.C. in the 1850s, so that goes with it. On the other hand, you know, he dies in 1872. He dies before Yellowstone is even a national park. So if we think of these time periods, he's traveling in the Southwest during the Mexican-American War. So he's influenced by these notions of manifest destiny and Western expansion, but also feeling kind of sympathetic for Native people. So really torn between the two. And I think that comes out in his work.
I think that spending as much time as he did among Indians, doing all the portraits that he did in his Indian gallery, that you couldn't help but feel sympathetic.
Yeah. And, you know, feeling sympathetic in the 1840s and 1850s is different than at different time periods. So he is actually seeing pretty closely after being forced out of the Southeast, as tribes are being moved into Oklahoma Territory. He's in Oklahoma Territory in the 1840s during treaty talks between tribes who are now all together that they hadn't been before. So he's really kind of in the midst of it. And there's not as much, you know, unfortunately, we don't have Stanley's diaries to really deep into what was his true feelings. Before his time, yes, he was sympathetic. But then he also did believe in Western expansion. So you have images of people moving west, of cities, burgeoning cities, like or in Oregon Territory. So he has both sides of that.
Yeah, there's a beautiful painting of Willamette, taken from the vantage points high over the ridge as you look down in this valley. And it is an idyllic vision of the West. And if got much circulation, I'm sure it would sort of entice people to move west. And certainly other artists that came later, like Thomas Moran and Bierstadt, government used this as a way of moving people west. Was Stanley's work used in the same way earlier?
Yeah, in a few ways, because he was hired as the artist to accompany the Emory-Kearney expedition through kind of the Southwest and Santa Fe Trail. So Stanley did illustrations for then what was published as a report from an 1846 journey. Stanley was hired to accompany the Northern Railroad Survey in 1853, from St. Paul all the way to Puget Sound.
Yeah, this is the big Great Northern Railroad.
Yeah, those big railroad surveys that, you know, there were four, several different ones, different routes taken. And the cost of that, so if you think the government, he was being paid by the U.S. government to do illustrations of that western part of the United States, which would then be used absolutely for go west, you know, again, westward expansion as a national ideology and move. So he was under the payroll of the government for a couple of different expeditions, and then his work would appear in those survey reports.
Yeah. The Smithsonian Gallery that burned, this was his sort of prize possession at the point, and I assume they were charging admission or he was making money off the fact that the American people were seeing this Indian gallery. Give us a sense of what we lost in that fire. Did they look very much different than the work of, say, Bodmer or Catlin? Because, you know, both of those, well, Bodmer was a little more painterly, but Catlin, you know, almost had a primitive look to his work. And certainly when you look at the works that survive of Stanley, they're very painterly works.
Sure. Yeah. And Stanley, even though he was really self-taught, what you'll see, and it comes out in the exhibition, and I imagine that the Indian Gallery was similar. Early in his career, he really was learning anatomy, learning how to make a figure look a little more relaxed, less kind of stiff and two-dimensional. So as he was learning as an itinerant portrait painter, he did do some of those portraits in Indian Territory very early. And there are some awkward proportions, say the figure might be quite large compared to a small horse. You know, they just look a little off. But as he spent time in Washington, D.C., among the arts associations there, he actually shared a studio with Charles Bird King, a portrait painter in Washington, D.C., that we also know as a painter of Indians. So his style and his just skill level increased. So I think the portraits at the Smithsonian would have been a nice variation. His mature style is quite advanced. He was looking at European art. He was thinking about pyramid compositions that were very classical, going back to Renaissance time. So a bit more sophisticated, a little more polished and refined. And then again, more romantic or allegorical based on instead of a strict documentary. So the whole range, in my guess, would have been on view at the Smithsonian. And some views, some landscape views would have been mixed in there. Some multi-figure compositions, some single-figure compositions, and all of that together. And in a kind of classical late 19th century, mid-19th century style, floor to ceiling just filled the walls with people and scenes, and you would have really had a variety there.
Yeah, well, it's a shame that was all lost. So has that really set back his reputation because so much of that work was lost?
Yes. What he was really trying to do was get the government to purchase his whole Indian gallery. And so he put a lot of time, effort, and finances into the Indian gallery itself, and then he never even insured it. So he really lost everything. So that would have been where, most of his work was. There are only about 220 or so surviving paintings out there for John McStanley, and the catalog lists most of them, so you get a pretty good sense of it. So some of the surviving work is maybe not as appealing to a broader range of people. Like, it might be portraits of particular judges. He did a whole series of those. And you don't get as much, you know, interest and play from that. Now, interestingly, the Gilcrease itself has one of the best Stanley collections anywhere. And so you can really see the variety of his oeuvre right there in Tulsa regularly. You know, this is a special occasion, of course. But those multi-figure paintings tend to be more representative of his mature style. I think some of Stanley's reputation is a little dismissed because those early paintings are still kind of awkward. He's still really developing his skill sets. But man, when he gets there in the 1850s to Washington, D.C., they're just incredible paintings.
Now, I think the Met loaned one of those portraits you're talking about, right? It was from the 1840s, I think.
Yes.
And it does look a little stilted, really. I mean, compared to what portrait painting will look like 20 or 30 years later.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the Williamson family. And it's a charming little painting, but it's definitely done by a young painter, you know, someone who hasn't had a lot of formal training. He certainly wasn't John Singleton Copley right out of the gate. So he had to work at it. But you can see how he changes over time. And the Roth family, which is from the collection of the Gilcrease, is really starts to get where he's transitioning out of that kind of stiff itinerant approach to figures into something a bit more complex, even, you know, how the figures are posed or what their accoutrements happen to be. So all of that certainly does change over time.
And when I think of Stanley prior to learning about this show, I tended to think of his work, say, like the painting that is at the Gilcrease, the Scouts and the Tetons, which is sort of a historical sort of story done in oil, if you will. What is the other artist? Is it his name Ranny, I believe, who also does these sort of historical stories, my version of Daniel Boone crossing the Cumberland Gap, you know, these sorts of things. And that is a part of his work, is it not?
It is. And that's something that also makes him unique. If you think of Ranny, William Ranny, who you just brought up, tends to do more the genre scenes, the Anglo story, you know, the pioneers going to the West, and sticks to that side of it, that historic, you know, heritage and American migration. Stanley does both. That Scouts and the Tetons is an explorer party, likely the Stevenson Group, the Railroad Survey Party. And so you have that Anglo movement to the West, as well as the Native Americans. And so that might also be a little bit of Stanley. It's like, where do you put him? He's not just one. He's not just the other. He kind of covers these different grounds. And the exhibition's name, The Painted Journeys. Journeys are quite literally what Stanley took around the whole United States. But it's also all these little pockets of the variety of his work that makes him this artist.
Compared to the Scouts and the Tetons, there's another painting in the exhibition, which is one, I assume, that came out of his journeys with Stephen Kearny's Army of the West march towards California, mm-hmm. in which the perspective is from an Indian that's sort of tailing them.
Right. Yes. There was quite a lot of danger on many of Stanley's journeys. And yeah, that one is the more aggressive tribes that would have been, yeah, tailing Kearny and
watching to see what they're doing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. No, and I think that's a sort of a remarkable perspective for that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
My guest today is Mindy Bisaw, a curator now at Crystal Bridges. She used to be at the Whitney Western Art Museum at the Buffalo Bill Center, and the exhibit Painted Journeys, The Art of John McStanley, is now open at Gilcrease Museum, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. She was co-curator. How much work came out of all of these, how much of the finished sort of oil painting from Stanley came from these trips, say the Kearny expedition or the Pacific Railroad surveys or his various travels, because what you really see is he really traveled nearly every part of the West at one point or another.
Yeah. I'd say if you're going to the exhibition and you're looking for, where are those paintings that were really from the journeys themselves, you won't find much. Again, the paintings that he probably did in the field or the sketches in the field, most of that fed into the Indian Gallery, which we no longer have. But I would say every one of those paintings includes something of those journeys. That's where he got his inspiration. That's where the landscape came from. That's where the ideas for the figures came from. And so it might not be a direct correlation. There are some sketches and watercolors in the exhibition that would be as close as you get to those field studies, you know, capturing that. But remember, it was quite difficult. What do you take with you on these journeys, you know, where you are? Really have to be on the move, have to be really alert. So likely he just had pencil and paper in the field itself. And then he would stop in places like San Francisco and do a whole series of small landscape studies based on the Kearny Southwest journey. Then he did the same thing in the East. He was in Washington, D.C., and he worked up lots of watercolors after going on the railroad survey. So those would be what was used then to make the prints for the book. So all of his journeys really are throughout his artwork, but maybe not as direct as we might expect.
Well, and it probably, if his sketchbooks were lost, then that's really sort of a lost piece of how he worked. But it sounds like a lot of the Western artists that we think of, the Morans and the Bierstadts, he would come back to the East to actually do the large-scale oils. And so I guess my question is, was he like Moran and Bierstadt, who if they didn't like the placing of a tree or where the cliff was, they'd just move it somewhere in the painting? Was he very similar in that way?
Well, I would say every artist has some level of interpretation and license, absolutely.
But some more than others.
And some more than others, definitely. And if you think of this notion of how you're influenced culturally, so if it is a romantic or reflectionary thinking of certain tribes or the sunsets, you know, all of that is certainly present in Stanley. But it is a little different than, say, someone like Charles Bird King, who had the various tribes come to him in Washington, D.C., and he really applied his portrait painting conventions to those people. Stanley was out in that world and painting those figures. So I think we can assume there is some likeness and there's views absolutely that were pretty close to what they would have looked like. So we can match them up, but he was, certainly was an artist.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about him, with all these travels, when we think of, say, Western art, we think a lot of Plains culture or Southwestern culture. And there's some of, there's both of within his work. There's also work from the Northwest, from the Far West, mm-hmm. which really not a whole lot of artists documented.
Right, yeah. We don't often think of Oregon Territory, for example, as part of the Western route. That was pretty far. It wasn't where everyone got to.
In fact, it was the first place people went west to, actually.
Right, you know, so the Oregon Trail ends up there. But I wouldn't put Catlin in that. You know, he gets to the upper Missouri, mm-hmm. and that's about pretty good. You know, you get to Fort Union. Same thing with Bodmer, who goes a little farther. So they don't get all the way there, and maybe there is a different way of thinking about what is West, what is frontier at the time. Would you include Hawaii? Most didn't. So what about California? Sure, you know, Gold Rush, things like that are happening at the time. But we don't see that in a lot of other artists' work.
And we don't see works of Native Americans for that area. I'm thinking of a Correct. Piece that's in the show of Great Northwest Tribe. Is it Yakima Indians?
Yes.
So. And, you know, there's just not a whole lot of artistic depiction of that culture that sort of survives in the mainstream. I think probably in that area there are artists that are, but certainly in our part of the country, we don't see a whole lot of that. So that's sort of new for a lot of people who think of Western art.
Yes.
Painted Journeys, the Art of John McStanley, will be on display through the end of the year at Gilcrease Museum. Now, Mindy, as people go through the show, what are some of the standout paintings in this particular show?
Well, you've mentioned a couple. One, Scouts Along the Teton River is a beauty, and that is, you know, figures up on a bluff kind of overlooking this beautiful sunset. Not a terribly large painting, but just a really nice little gem. The last of their race mm-hmm. is also an iconic kind of allegorical treatment of the subject. There are also a couple of images of trappers who are trading their kill, their furs. There's some negotiation going on. Those are paintings not to be missed. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the buffalo hunt that's in the Crystal Bridges Museum of Arts collection, which is on loan here as well. But one big surprise, I think, of the exhibition will be the very large grand picture of Red Jacket. And this was Stanley reflecting back on a story, making, you know, really a historical genre painting of it. And it's a very large, impressive painting from late in his career.
Now, so is this a portrait? Is this a portrait of Red Jacket?
Yeah, he's an orator. He's standing in the center, but it's the whole scene. He's telling his story. He's on trial, and he's going to speak and really talks his way out of the punishment that would have happened. Mm. So a very large painting, a nice big centerpiece.
And in the course of the exhibit, you're going to see scenes from the Plains. You're going to see scenes from the Southwest and really from the far south desert southwest. We're talking like Gila country at one point.
Yeah.
He really was widely traveled.
Yes, he was. Well, and that's another fantastic painting, is the Gila River. And it's almost a magical, Edenic, rainbow color, lush view. So with those several highlights, you'll really see the depth and variety of Stanley's work.
I know you've spent a long time finding these paintings with such a small amount of work that's left of John McStanley. I think probably a lot of work has gone into choosing which ones are in part of this retrospective. What's your hope that people will reassess John McStanley? How do you hope that they will reassess John McStanley?
Well, I would hope that this exhibition helps to put his name back in the conversation in a wider sense of Western art, but not just Western art, in American art, because he has a pretty unique place in that mid-19th century life and things that are going on. So that reconsideration or renewal of attention for his work, I think, is one thing. And just so that he's spoken of amongst his contemporaries, in, you know, maybe not as household of a name as Catlin, but it sure would be nice to go, oh, Stanley, I know him, instead of, Stanley, who's that?
Well, now, has there ever been a retrospective of his work since his death?
There was a smaller exhibition with a little catalog in the 1940s, and that was, I believe, the Smithsonian show. And so that was the last little kind of closer look at John McStanley. And we were really fortunate with this exhibition and with the catalog, which is quite extensive, to be able to use research that Julie Schimmel had compiled. And Julie Schimmel had written her dissertation on John McStanley in the 1980s. And she had beautiful research files, had done a lot of the legwork, even identifying where things were. And Julie happens to now live in Cody, Wyoming. And so the Buffalo Bill Center of the West was able to work with her and work with her files. And that really kick-started the whole project, because otherwise this would have taken several more years to get to. So we were fortunate to be able to work with Julie and use her life's research.
All right. Well, we look forward to the results at the Gilchrist Museum, Painted Journeys, The Art of John McStanley. Mindy Beesaw, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mindy Beesaw is the co-curator of Painted Journeys, The Art of John McStanley, organized by the Buffalo Bill Center of the West. The exhibit is on display at Gilchrist Museum through January 3rd. Beesaw is currently a curator at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville, Arkansas. For more information on the exhibit, visit gilchrist.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.